Yeah.
Hey, hey.
Let's get it.
Take that.
Once upon a time, not long ago.
Was that like a back and forth thing, or were you just trailing off in verse?
Yeah, I don't know. Just going off the dome. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Check it out. All right. Well, what's up? You said wobble?
I said, well, why?
Oh, okay. Well, we're done.
Wheel up. Jump and wave. Sorry.
The part where I sit down. As Amber put it. I don't like... What did she say? I don't like being told what to do.
I don't like dancers to tell me what to do.
Right. Not here for line dances whatsoever.
Hilarious.
That was. What's up, y'all? Welcome to Through Thick and Thin.
Yes.
The Ultimate Girlfriend Podcast. Huh?
Back again for the umpteenth time.
Yeah. I'm Ashley.
Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Edwin.
Wow, that doesn't go as well.
Not quite.
It's all right. Ash doesn't work either. My name is Ash. So, yeah. Tamar Braxton is singing and was singing with a new face.
Okay. All right.
What are you up to?
Shout out to the Soul Train Awards.
Talking about Jekyll and Hyde.
All right. Are you done?
Speaking of hiding, she got a new face to hide from Vince. No, I'm kidding. Domestic abuse is not a funny topic of conversation.
That we can agree.
You have to know what you can and can't say in front of people.
Okay.
All right, let's get into it, right? Yeah? Yeah, you want to do it?
Okay, I don't know what this voice is.
Okay. All right, let go. Okay. Yeah, so this episode of Through Thick and Thin aired on February 19th, 2001. Is directed by Sheldon Elts and written by Mara Brockett-Kill, Marcia Gray Rubin, and somebody else. David
right.
Silverman. David Silverman.
Dad Rag, and that other guy.
Basically, on this episode, we have two characters we have not seen before. Who are they? I'll let you know. First, we have Dr. Dunn, Joyce, played by Jocelyn Elders. She was born in rural Arkansas, and her and her seven siblings worked in cotton fields with their sharecropper parents. Did you know that this is the only thing she's ever acted in?
What? That's impressive.
Because in 1960, she became a doctor from the University of Arkansas's medical school. And she specialized in pediatric endocrinology and became an expert on childhood sexual development. So, in 1987, Governor of Arkansas at the time, Bill Clinton, appointed her to be the director of the state's Department of Health. And when he became president, he wanted her to be the Surgeon General.
What?
Bam! Look at what Mara Brockerkill be doing. Introducing folks to folks that they should already be knowing, but sometimes they don't be knowing, so she puts real people in her shows. So, she was a strong advocate for health education, including sex education in schools. She had some controversial remarks about masturbation and condom distribution in schools. So because of that, she was forced to resign only after serving a little over a year in the role. Then she went back to become a professor at her alma mater.
Yes.
Dr. Elders is still alive. So, you know, let's not sign her off if, you know, you're listening and you thought about it. Let's see.
RIP t-shirt.
Right. Let's see. So she was, she also strongly advocated for sex and reproductive education within African-American communities. She criticized the fact that older textbooks usually focused or showed white females. And the fact that, like, these textbooks would say that only white females had naturally regulated periods, but the truth was these white girls were on birth control, which helped regulate their periods. And that also at the time, black women weren't seeking out birth control because the ministers of their church said that black that birth control pills were essentially black genocide.
Wow.
Yeah. She was actually very vocal about her disgust with the black men exploiting black women and stripping them of their reproductive rights because, quote, if you can't control your reproduction, you can't control your life. Say that. Yeah. So, let's see. Also, because I'm actually fascinated in her, now that I know this, right?
Yeah.
Let's see. So she was concerned with young diabetic women getting pregnant also, especially as an endocrinologist. She said if young teen women who have diabetes get pregnant, they have a higher chance of their bodies rejecting the fetus or the fetus to develop abnormalities. So to prevent this from happening, she thoroughly talked to her patients about the dangers of early pregnancy and importance of contraceptives in taking control of their sexuality. So out of the 260 young diabetic women she treated, only one of them became pregnant. So I think that's pretty effective.
Yeah.
Of course she dealt with, racism. She said, some people in the American Medical Association, a certain group of them didn't even know I was a physician.
Racism in Arkansas?
What? Right. Back in like the 50s and the 60s?
Yeah.
Right. And they were passing resolution to say that from now on, every surgeon general must be a physician, which was a knock at me. They don't expect the black female to have accomplished what I have and to have done the things that I have. Yes, woman. Let's put you on a shirt. And also she said that I am who I am because I'm a black woman. And she felt as if she wasn't in a position to be the voice for the African-American community and speak on poverty and its role in teenage pregnancy, which, you know, the two go hand in hand very much so.
Great.
So, yeah, I'm not going to, you know, continue to read through her Wikipedia page, but definitely check out more about Joycelyn Elders, Dr. Joycelyn Elders. When you have the time, I will probably also tweet out some gems, but that was cool, for her to have played on this episode of Through Thick and Thin. But also, we have a more familiar person on, this episode, and it also kind of lends itself to the relationship that has never officially been established between these two shows, but kind of is there. But Shar Jackson, playing Niecy Jackson, was also in this episode, as we all know her as Niecy from Moesha and the Parkers.
Mo to the.
Eat to the. So, yes. And, I mean, y'all know Shar Jackson. I don't have to go through her IMDb. Y'all see her when y'all see her and y'all know who she is. She is Countess Vaughn's best friend, and she had several children with Kevin Federline.
Shout out to K-Fed. Scammer elite.
Yeah. So, let's get on into the show.
Let's do it then.
Don't do that again.
The episode begins with Sean and Joan enjoying a lovely evening on the couch. I'm sorry. And Sean is trying to finagle his way to be able to spend the night with his girlfriend. He lists a bunch of reasons why he should not drive home, ranging from the believable to wet roads, he just had a lot of wine, to the slightly absurd, to where his brakes are faulty and his steering wheel is unreliable. Joan, initially not picking up on what he's trying to do, suggests that she could call him a cab since Uber was not yet popular, or he could sleep on the couch. And he was saying, well, he could sleep on the couch, or maybe just sleep where she sleeps. And she was trying to determine if he was just trying to spend the night, and by spend the night, keep his clothes on. And he was saying, well, am I spending the night or am I spending the night?
So, wait. This happened on both episodes?
That's what I was telling.
No, I thought you just meant the 1 month part. No. Not this whole... Then what happened at the beginning of... The beginning of the other episode start with them playing games, right?
I think it was just straight.
That was the episode before that. What? Anyway, keep going.
Okay. So, here we establish that Joan is still firmly committed to the 3 month rule. And they've been dating for just over a month. So, haven't quite made it there yet. But they are moving along pretty well. But she's now considering maybe 3 months is a bit much. Maybe it's more of a suggestion than a hard and fast rule. All this is going on in the back of her mind as we cut to the next day when she's walking into work. She's strolling into her office, and Maya tells her she needs to talk to her. Joan tells Maya she needs to talk to her. They're both assuming that they're dilemma or story is more important than the other, so they're trying to figure out who should go first.
Spider-Man meme.
Sure. So Joan ultimately decides that it's her story that should be told first. She says she is considering waiving her 3 month rule and getting it in with Sean. Maya says, okay, that's cool. However, my news is a little more weight. Since Darnell and I are trying to get pregnant with their second child, of course, so a potential young sibling for Jimboree. During this time, Maya is indicating the issues they're having conceiving, and she's saying that it doesn't seem like there's any issue on her end since everything is on schedule from her ovulation to her cycle. At that very point, William walks in and reacts much like a teenager at the discussion of ovulation and related topics, and he just loses it. He can't handle this at all. He's like, why would you have this conversation out in public, even though they are in Joan's office? Which, I guess, given the lack of information in that time, and to some extent now, it's not that surprising that he would react that way to the open public discussion of women's health issues in a public forum. So that was kind of funny. And the fact that, you know, almost 20 years later, we probably got a little better, but not as much as we probably should. So he exits quickly, trying to escape the awkward situation. And Maya lets it slip to Joan that she typically uses her sick days for non-sick day activities, like going to Disneyland and getting her hair done. So she wouldn't actually use a sick day to go to the doctor or have necessarily enough sick days to go to the doctor. She thinks the problem is Darnell's in, since he works as a baggage handler and they have these new x-ray machines at the airport. So they may be having him shooting blanks. Ultimately, she is letting Joan know that she does plan to be sick next week. So a classic work trope of planning a sick day in advance. And I'll ask you, you can, hypothetically speaking, if the statute of limitations has passed and you're comfortable discussing it, have you ever taken a sick day just to get a day off work?
Yeah. I've had days where I just couldn't even. Real. Especially when I would work in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And, I worked in Atlanta and, like, say it was raining outside and the kids just returned from, like, a vacation, or it was raining outside or it was going to storm later and something else was happening. And if I could just predict that traffic was probably going to be more of a thing than it should have been, sometimes I would just be like, I just can't. I haven't done it at this job, but I do believe in, like, taking mental days. You know, there's nothing wrong with a mental health day. That's still in the realm of a sick day, in my opinion. But I've always wanted to, like, plan a sick day. So, like, you and me take a sick day at the same time and then just, like, I don't know, do whatever, you know, whether it's, like, running around the city or just, like, having a day in to do something.
That's what's up. Yeah. I mean, cool. Probably should talk about that before we got on the podcast. But, yeah, I'm with that.
Yeah, I mean, not saying, like, that's something we're going to plan and do within the next 6 months or a year or whenever, but, you know, there's that.
I like that, though. That's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, what about you? I think it's a thing, and honestly, a podcast I really love, The Black Guy Who Tips. Shout out to Rod and Karen, even though they're not listening right now. But they have many great discussions about how people have this stigma about taking time off. You know, if you're not, you know, deathly ill or severely tired, like, just to take a day for yourself, like, it's kind of the stigma against it. Whereas that's time you've earned and negotiated as part of your package. So if nothing else, it's your duty to take them, typically. I mean, even if they cash you out, some places don't, so it's use it or lose it. So if you feel like you take a day and you have the capacity for it, I think it's perfectly reasonable. And probably in the last 2 to 3 years, I've gotten much more comfortable doing that. Whereas earlier in my career, I would...
Doing what?
Like, if you have a day where, you know, I know it's a light day or I can move some stuff around, or, you know what, maybe I'll work remote today, or maybe I'll take a sick day, or...
Okay, well, you have a privilege that allows you to say, I just wake up and don't feel like going into the office, I'm not.
Right, but even before that, I'm saying, like, there's a situation where, you know, like, I could go in, but I know I don't feel 100%. Like, I'm not sick enough where I'm bedridden, but I know I don't feel well. Like, that kind of thing. Whereas, well, you may try to push through it. It's like, you know what? If anything, the best thing for me to do is to stay home, because particularly if you work in, like, team environments, if you go in sick and get the team sick, then a week from now you may have 3 to 4 people out of the office versus simply you just taking a day to treat yourself and then be able to come back perhaps the next day, perhaps the day after, feeling much better. So I'm a big advocate for taking full advantage of your time, reclaiming your time, as the great Maxine Waters says, and, you know, just not being, you know, ashamed to take days, whether it be for health, personal reasons, or what have you. It's your time and use it how you see fit.
Well, yeah, that's true. And, you know, we are talking from a place where we have salary jobs and we can take time off and not
have a lot of,
you know, have to worry about, like, not getting paid. Because even depending on some, you know, entrepreneurial rules, it's that's not something you can really do.
With the same flexibility.
Right. Meaning, like, especially in certain roles where
you're providing a service. If you take a day off, then you're not getting paid for that day. So, that sucks when that happens. What's that? Drake has this one song, and I can't think of the name of it. But it described how I felt about taking time off work.
Do you remember the lyrics?
Nope, or else I would have Googled that. It's a single. All I know is it's a single. I Googled Drake singles, and I'm getting nothing that's actually helpful, which is so surprising. Because it's like, oh, you mean like every song Drake's done? No, Drake has done way too many songs. Just give me all his singles.
Are you talking about the Tuesday song?
What is the Tuesday song?
Club Going Up on a Tuesday.
No, Going Up on a Tuesday.
Because he's working all weekend.
No.
Got no time to party on the weekend.
No, what? Why would we be going out? Let me think.
Okay, well, you think
I can't even remember what album it was on.
It'll come to you, I'm sure, later.
No, we're not going to move on until I figure this out.
Okay, cool. Let me know when you're done. I'll be here drinking my beer.
You're welcome. let's see. I know it came out maybe a few years ago. I went on vacation in 2015. Drake singles, 2015. Like, it's kind of on the tip of my tongue, but definitely wasn't Hotline Bling. Drake never had a number one song, but here. No, just give me a look. Like, why is that so hard, man?
Why don't you go to Wikipedia?
That I have been to several, and it's like not just giving me a list of. Here we go. Okay, let's try this. 2007, 2008, 2015. Wasn't Take Care. Wasn't. No. Hold on. Let me see. Now I need to go and look up the lyrics. See if what I'm thinking is it. Da. No. Oh, I wanted it to be. Dang it. All right. You go on and then I'll find it and we'll loop back.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Okay.
2015.
Back to the episode. At Davis's restaurant, the girls are meeting up. Tony and Lynn receive Joan's confirmation that she plans on having sex. And they are mildly shocked since it hasn't been 3 months.
I like how she had to announce that to everybody. Hey, girls, guess what?
Guess what I'm doing? But yeah. Well, I don't know why that laugh was. But no. Tony's concerned that, you know, Sean's been with just about everybody, girl. You know, he's a sex addict. Like, she didn't know he was a sex addict.
Nah.
And she said he's been tested for everything, which makes sense. And she was saying that, you know, he's ready to go and ready to roll. And ultimately, the conversation leads to Jones' concern that he may be super experienced and he's, you know, seen just about everything under the sun. And I forget how they got to the joke, but basically Tony said that Joan maybe need to be worried about Sean's whistle being blown too much. So that was funny to me. And so now he's talking about taking this flight with him. And basically the joke was, you know, enjoy, lay back, and enjoy the complimentary nuts. And I think Lynn said, if there was turbulence, just stick your head between your legs and ride it out. So they were taking full advantage of the phone innuendo there. So that was pretty funny to me. To you, boy. Joan now is not too confident in her bedroom performance since Sean has numerically a lot more experience, and she assumes that, you know, guys are a lot more confident because they just come in, go out, go on about their lives. And Tony says, well, typically you can tell how much you enjoy it by the little blue box from Tiffany's that is there to greet you afterwards. So we see that she had many a satisfied encounter.
Oh, Tiffany was her zenith. Keep going.
And Lynn introduces the Kama Sutra, which I do believe was quite popular in the early 2000s, as it was, I guess, introduced to America or the West. Is it Indian innate, or Hindu, or I'm not sure of the origin or
source. Oh, I found it.
All right.
It wasn't even a Drake song.
Oh.
It was featured.
Oh, what's wrong with it?
Believe me.
Okay.
I'm the only one that get the job done. I don't know a nigga that could cover for me.
That wasn't anti.
That's how I always felt whenever I take time off.
That wasn't anticlimactic at all. So.
Love you too. Keep going.
So Lynn introduces the Kama Sutra. Tony and Maya are having lunch without Joan. And Maya confides in Tony of the concerns of her pregnancy efforts. Darnell got checked out. He's perfectly fine. So, by process of elimination, the concern has to lie with Maya. She says she's not telling Joan because Joan worries too much and will worry her even more if she lets her in on the situation. So, Tony suggests that Maya used, or has she visited, her gynecologist. And of course, William walks by again as they're discussing matters of female health, and he once again falls apart. So he cancels his Denver omelet that he was going to have, I guess, for a late brunch. I'm assuming it was lunchtime and during the week because he was in a suit, but William could wear a suit, I guess, on the weekend. Shout out to Reggie Hayes. And Tony suggests that instead of using her HMO, Maya can utilize Tony's gynecologist to the stars, who, of course, is played by a real-life doctor that we introduced in the beginning of the episode. You want to drop that name for us one more time?
The what?
The name of the doctor. The real name of the doctor.
Oh, Dr. Jocelyn Elders.
And she played the character of?
Dr. Dunn.
Yes. So, that evening, at Joan's house, Joan is ready to roll. She puts on this lingerie for Sean. She has him sitting in bed. She's walking in, trying to be seductive. And it's Joan, so it's more endearing than sexy, really. She's trying hard. You can tell she's trying hard. But, you know, she's very self-conscious. And trying to make, you know, this a memorable evening since it'll be their first time. And Sean says she looks like she's pulling a muscle. So she's being very neurotic about this, given her personality and breaking the 3-month rule and this being their first time and his experience. All these things coming together to make her very concerned about this evening going flawlessly. So he finally calms her down, eases her concerns. And they begin. Cut to the end of that evening, and Sean is nodding off sleep after what he thinks is a job well done. Joan is less than satisfied. She felt like things went terrible. And she explains to her friends the next day that Sean was not good. He just got in and got out. Very much like a jackrabbit. He just was going through the motions, much like a mechanical process. You're just getting to the finish line. No real engagement, no real intimacy, no foreplay. Just wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Kind of literally a lack of finesse, as it were. And I took this to say basically not in a extremely negative connotation, but as far as his action, Sean's basically a sexual sociopath where he just gets in, gets out, and then goes on about his day. Or night.
You'd be surprised.
Well, man. Takes all types, right?
No.
But apparently that is a thing. And Tony makes the astute observation that Sean's probably never really made love, which is different than having sex. And that he may just simply be a novice or a virgin to that situation. So Joan brings up concern about bringing this to his attention because of the stereotype about black women being bossy. Now, Ashley, as a black woman, have you encountered this stereotype? And if so, in what context, whether it be professional or personal, if you care to share?
Wait, what stereotype?
About black women being bossy.
I've just heard that women are bossy more than anything.
Okay.
In professional roles, not black women. I'm extremely passive aggressive at work because I don't take most of the frustrations and debates home with me, so I don't care. Occasionally I'll defend something, but for the most part I just kind of observe. Part of that is also because I don't want to say something that just sounds stupid just because it was the first thing that came to my head at the time. That's something I do want to work on, is being a little more vocal, but I can't really see anyone calling me bossy just because I haven't really done anything to, you know, warrant that, but I know that's a thing. And when people are doing the whole lean in and all that other, you know, white woman feminism, that it was more of a thing. And I can imagine women in more in roles that demand them to speak up more, that they would be labeled bossy, whereas a man wouldn't. But, you know, as long as my check clears when it's supposed to.
Respect. Throughout this conversation, many insights are made as to how everyone prefers their sexual encounters, whether it be Maya saying she gotta have her socks on, her feet cold, she can't get into it. Lynn, she prefers a smart guy, nothing's better than a curious mind and tongue, so there's that. And it's important for Joan to be vocal with Sean so she can have, and I quote, her meat the way she likes it. So they give her that advice and she's off. Maya musters up the courage to go to Dr. Dunn. And Tony actually shows up too. I thought that was dope. She's a quarter and came through and attended the visit with her. Tony kind of be trying to be messy, since Dr. Dunn works with many celebrities and famous individuals. She saw, I forget the celebrity she name dropped, but she saw someone leaving the office as she was walking in. She was trying to get Dr. Dunn to spill the tea, as it were, about one celebrity or another.
Right.
So, Tony being Tony. And Dr. Dunn comes in, and in a very measured and level-headed voice, tries to give Maya her diagnosis. And Maya was quick to jump on all the words she was using. She mentioned a fibroid tumor in her uterus. So, of course, hearing the word tumor gave Maya alarm. The fact that it was in her uterus gave her alarm. And then the fact that it was non-cancerous, given the fact that it could have been cancerous, gave her some concern. And so she goes off on a tangent about how, since this disproportionately impacts African-American women, that it could be part of a CIA conspiracy, which, you know, isn't the first and only time I've heard of something along those lines as it relates to many medical ailments that impact the African-American community. And Dr. Dunn indicated that some of the key factors that may contribute to her fibroids would be diet and stress as potential causes. So Maya indicated, of course, that one big source of her stress would be Joan if she found out about this. So that would be probably in her best interest to, for the time being, keep her in the dark about her diagnosis. Now, options for treatment were mentioned as far as either surgery or hormone therapy, which Maya initially rebuffed because I think she mentioned her aunt had hormone therapy and she ended up with a mustache, if I'm not mistaken. So she was hesitant to do that until the alternative was surgery. So she said, we'll try out hormone therapy for now. So now she at least knows what's going on. Cut to Davis's restaurant. Joan and William are having a meal, and she's soliciting his advice on how to engage Sean regarding their bedroom activity. And he panics because he thinks Yvonne uses Joan to have a discussion about his relationship. So once he realizes that's not the case, he feels a lot better. He's a lot more relaxed. During this conversation, Joan is giving William insight or getting his feedback on how to approach this with Sean. And the table next to Joan asked for the ketchup, was it? Some ketchup or mustard. They asked him to pass that, interrupting the conversation. Joan obliges, gives the ketchup, gets back into the conversation. A couple seconds later, they return the bottle, saying it's basically empty. Then, as the conversation continues, this table, the woman next door, Niecy, actually interjects in the conversation, tries to provide some insight. Joan is initially saying, well, we didn't really ask you. And Niecy says, well, you all were talking so loud, I thought the conversation was for everybody. So that was pretty funny to me. And of course, we all know Joan really didn't want any smoke because she wasn't about that life as far as handling business, as we've seen in very early episodes about confrontations. So it was in her best interest to go ahead and let this go, take the L, as it were. But she cuts back the conversation with William. William blames women since they insist on men having to chase, and then by the time they finally entice them to take us seriously as men and determine we're worthy of having sex with, we're so exhausted that we don't really want to do anything besides just have sex, no foreplay, etc.
He told on himself.
Yeah, that was. I know if you peeped that, but basically he was saying, "Look." I'm just here so I don't get fined. But then there was a Heather Hunter reference made, which I thought was, wow, that's a deep cut. Throwback to an adult film actress of yesteryear. So shout out to Heather Hunter. And
oh, wow. I didn't even put that together.
Really?
Yeah. Anyway.
And let's see. And then Joan, I think, tries to re-engage Niecy in the conversation by asking her her age regarding how she had to communicate with her boyfriend, what age she was when she had this conversation. And Niecy was saying she didn't think that was her business. And so finally, she's able to get a little help and insight from her to figure out what she needs to do next time her and Sean talk.
No, that I didn't think she gave her any.
Right. Oh, you're right. They just ended the conversation there after the age wasn't her business.
Right.
So, Joan leaves the restaurant, goes home, and I'm assuming it's the next night or that night, her and Sean are playing Scrabble. Joan, with her usual subtlety, has many clues and words. Was it foreplay, lick? What was the other one? It was supposed to be one word, but she ran out of letters.
It was supposed to be fondle, yeah. But it was fondue. Yeah.
So she didn't have any vowels. Well, she didn't have an L, so she put fondue instead of fondle. So basically trying to give Sean some clues as to what she was seeking next time they would have sex. So he was asking her to be direct, say what she means, mean what you say, which is typically, you know, one of the best routes when in doubt. And she was saying that they don't make love, they just have sex. He's like, I thought that was the same thing, which obviously isn't the right thing to say at that point if it's established that she's talking about two different things. I also wanted to call out here a shout out to his Carl Thomas sweater he was wearing during this scene.
Turtleneck realness or not this episode? I remember him wearing a deep turtleneck, cable turtleneck at one point.
So I just want to go ahead and call that out. Shout out to that. Whenever I see such fashion, I got to make sure it's recognized for the glory that it is. And luckily, Sean is willing to be taught. You know, he doesn't take offense. He's receptive and willing to listen and learn, which is a great skill, particularly as an adult. Always be willing to grow and develop. Never think you know everything. So she suggests they move to the floor. He's like, oh, so we gonna do it on the floor? As I think a joke, but they were just going to stand up and stand apart from each other and build into what Joan was seeking as a more intimate interaction. Sean is still worried about the end game. He's like, will this end in us naked? She's like, yes, eventually. But there are steps you take to get there. So, seems to be working. You know, they're bonding, emotionally connecting, looking to each other's eyes. And it's more of a process, more engaged on an emotional level. So that's good. So good, in fact. The next day, Joan shows up a couple hours late to work, if I'm not mistaken.
She was late.
Looking disheveled. So things clearly went well on both ends for her and Sean. So shout out to them. Maya comes into her office after she let her know that she, I think, was the back of her shirt was unbuttoned or something?
Unzipped.
So she helped her out with that. So Joan lets her know that she's aware that she visited the gynecologist that actually she shares and she introduced Tony to. So I think Tony got the referral basket or whatever was the gift for referring clients. She was a little salty about that, but she was fully supportive of Maya as she undertook hormone therapy as it relates to her fibroids. And finally, they make a reference to Maya's uterus as William walks in to close the episode, much like it began, with him being unable to handle any discussion of the female anatomy in a medical sense. He loses it once again and storms out of the office to bring the episode to a close. So, what are your overall thoughts on Old Dog?
It was good. I think the B story was stronger than most of the episodes have been so far. The subject matter of the main story, I think, was relatable. It was interesting to see, and I guess, you know, it added perspective, because I would imagine some people probably assume that, you know, if this is your addiction, that you might have it all together, but you know, there are subtleties and differences, and you know, some people care, if they care enough, they'll work that out. If not, then you know, they won't, and they're selfish. Just like, you know, really anything in life. The B story, I don't think you really talked about that much, but I mean, you talked about it, but you didn't like engage in it. And I think that's a I think it was a good storyline. As I've been talking to friends recently, I've realized it's funny because it's like, it's a thing that no one talks about unless someone has it. Or it's something where it's not talked about publicly. Which I don't know why there's really any shame in it, because it's not something you can do to yourself. Like, you don't give yourself fibroids. I was talking to a friend recently because, so for anyone listening that doesn't know, and I don't mind sharing this, I just found out last week that I have fibroids, which explains a lot of symptoms that I've had, mostly back pain. That's the more consistent symptom. But as I've been talking to like either friends or family members, and because it is a thing that's predominantly found within Black women, either all of them have it or know someone that had it. And all of these women did a variety of measures to have it removed. So depending on age, sometimes you're like, if say the woman is like in her 40s or 50s or older, chances are she had to just have a hysterectomy. So that was it. You know, there are other alternatives, depending on the size, depending on location. And it's all just like really interesting because it's like, once you mention it to someone, then it's just like this whole world of like, oh yeah, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, why aren't we having these conversations maybe sooner? Because I think some of this stuff could, like, it can be prevented to an extent, sort of, kind of, but there are so many things that were, like, it's still, you don't 100% know the, like, direct cause, so it could be, like, a matter of things. But I have a friend that's an epidemiologist, and she was saying there might even be like a link between relaxers and fibroids, which, like, nowadays, I mean, you know, like little girls or whatnot are wearing their natural hair like from birth till. But, you know, like when I was growing up and kind of before then, at an age, you got a relaxer and then you wore your hair straight. Like, you weren't wearing afros, you weren't wearing puffs beyond a certain, like, age. By the time you were in school, your hair was straight. So for that to have been something where, you know, you're just doing that, say, every other weekend or every week or once a month, not knowing for like, say, 10 plus 15, maybe 20 years or longer, if you just went your whole life with a relaxer, and you could be putting like this thing, like you're thinking you're just straightening your hair, but you could be making yourself more susceptible to like infertility and, you know, childbirth problems and, like, I mean, just a whole mantra of like crap. And so there low key could be some truth to like Maya's like little conspiracy theory. And my mom and I were actually like joking about that. Cause I was telling her about, you know, like watching the episode and her saying that. And she, before I had even said anything, she was like, I bet you Maya thought it was a conspiracy. And I was like, well, actually, yeah. So yeah, I think it's interesting that, I mean, I don't know. It's not something that people talk about. So hopefully, that can change and things can get better and, you know, we just find methods to, I guess, like, shrink them or get rid of them in natural ways and it doesn't become a black woman thing anymore. I don't know of any white women, I don't think, that had any. So, I don't know, it's just interesting overall. What are your thoughts as a black man?
Well, I mean, well, obviously, I probably learned more about it in the past 2 to 3 weeks than I have in the past 30 years of life. So since it hadn't really been something that crossed my mind as something to be concerned about until it impacts, you know, people I care about and love. So having, you know, learned a lot about it in a short amount of time and still learning, to be honest. And I think it is something that we need to talk about more because if you don't know a lot about it, then any information you get, you can just take it and run with it without really getting context or understanding or, like, that's what you just mentioned about the potential correlation between relaxers. Never knew about that. But now it's something to, oh, wow, so that's something that may be a root cause for its cultural, you know, why it disproportionately impacts one culture versus another or one ethnic group. So just learning about it as we go, it's just been probably the biggest thing for me right now, just the accumulation of fact-based information and just figuring out, you know, is there anything I can do from a support standpoint or just, you know, not being ignorant of it to be useful. So.
Definitely, definitely. And I think too, like, especially in older women, I think having fibroids was not necessarily a death sentence, but it was like, you have fibroids, so you just knew, oh, okay, well, you could not have children later on. but science has evolved and surgeries have evolved. So that's no longer the case. You know, like if that's the plan in life that, you know early on, I don't want to have children, then you just go ahead and do that. But if it boils down to surgery, even if you do some of these, like the laser procedure or like the, I think it's the myomectomy, my somethingectomy, it's basically like they cut you open like your lower stomach and they remove them that way. And then from there, you can only have C-sections if you decide to give birth. But also, it's the surgery itself is similar to a C-section. Like the recovery period is pretty much the same. The procedure, I think, is pretty similar too. You know, they're now ways where you don't necessarily have to prevent that as a possibility, but also because those surgeries are still somewhat risky, if it gets to the point where they have to completely give a hysterectomy, then that has to happen. So it's just kind of like, it's just really, I don't know, it's just kind of an interesting thing. You know, I definitely have appreciated your support in the last, like, what, week and a half? Or maybe now it's been, like, about 2 weeks. The diagnosis hasn't been quite a week yet, almost a week. By the time this airs, probably a week. But, yeah, I mean, it's like, a lot and not a lot at the same time. I'm just speaking for myself.
Yeah. Understood.
Yep. Is there anything else on the episode?
What?
Oh, no. Yeah, we were at the end. I'm trying to think. Yeah, no, there, I mean, can't really think of anything with anything else. William just seems very much of a, for William to be like the quote-unquote good guy, well, I guess he kind of plays that role well if you think about it. Because, like, I guess on the outside, they appear to be kind of like, oh, this sensitive kind of, like, loner guy. But actually, William isn't, like, a forever alone type of guy. So I guess that's the difference. Like, if he were just a quintessential good guy that was always waiting for a girl to, like, pay him attention, and he was always upset when they didn't, that would be one thing. But no, he's just a typical guy.
You mean like the guy from that Twitter picture? He's a nerd carrying all those books, and the girl he likes walks past him to hang out with a thug. And then it fast forwards like 10 years later, and he's like a CEO millionaire, and the girl comes up pregnant with like 2 kids, and the thug dude's walking away from her, trying to talk to him.
He's like, is this like a pencil celebrities photo?
Yeah. You know exactly.
I know exactly what picture you're talking about.
Is that what you're getting at?
Similar, basically. It's very similar.
Gotcha.
But, yep. So, but those are my thoughts. When it comes to, when it comes down to, how do you think this episode would have gone on Insecure?
Well, given the only married couple was Tiffany and Derek, maybe they'll be the ones to use to have the fertility discussion and initially assume it's Derek, but find out Tiffany may have fibroids. So maybe that'll be the way they have that storyline to kind of develop, where maybe Molly kind of goes with her and assists there and helps her process the diagnosis and next steps and moving forward. Whereas maybe Molly or Issa have some established timeline, like maybe they read a book by Tyrese and Steve Harvey or Rev Run about, you know, how to think like a man and like a woman who has a man, I don't know. But establishing, like, I'm not going to give this guy any play physically until they text. and they realize they really click and vibe well, so maybe they want to follow that rule, and then they're trying to figure out, is it a good idea? So then maybe they have to debate with their friends. So like Molly, Issa, Kelly are talking in a group, and maybe Tiffany's involved as well, figuring out, is it the right move? And then maybe Issa, because she seems to be the most awkward in those encounters. As far as anytime she has sex with somebody, it's always something going on or wrong. So maybe figuring out if the guy's like super experienced, if he was a sex addict, for example, and concerned about not being up to par. So then how do you navigate that? So then they would try to figure out techniques, and maybe like that time they went to that sexpo, I think. So getting all the toys and contraptions and essential oils and items of the like to help aid in her performance, and then find out he's like kind of like Sean, just kind of getting in, getting out with no real respect for the emotional aspect of sex in a relationship. So then they have to figure out how to best bring that up. And then maybe since it's insecure, it'll be less of a positive interaction where she tries to explain it, but it comes out wrong. Like she presents it like, tries to be polite, but keeps saying the wrong words or wrong phrases and tries to keep stumbling over her words for more comedic effect. But then he ultimately kind of gets it or catches on. And maybe like that argument leads to them doing that. Along those lines.
Makes sense.
What say you?
I think if this were Insecure, then I feel like it wouldn't be Issa, but it would be Issa awkwardly dealing with someone that had. Well, like, kind of what I'm thinking might apply for a later episode, so. I don't know, honestly. I mean, maybe it, I'm trying to think of, like, you could go the educational route where it's like one particular person over the other, or like, you know, pick a character or whatever, and then they like like you see them dealing with the symptoms maybe over like the course of two episodes, and then like they go to the doctor and they find out, and maybe then they have surgery or something like that, or they have a you know, procedure. Or you can have on a flip side, maybe it's like one of the men in their lives and you see, so maybe it would be Lawrence because he's really the only like real focus that's the man on the show, and maybe seeing like how does he deal with, or maybe Dro, like finding out like, oh, okay, his girlfriend or his wife rather, like basically the significant other has it, and then dealing with how they feel as a man, you know, watching their person struggle with something and they kind of feel helpless because there's nothing they can do about it.
Okay. I can rock with that.
Yeah. That's all I got.
Cool.
In terms of
This episode.
Let's see. How do you think this episode would have gone if it were about somebody purposely having a hysterectomy, say like Glenn. Okay, so that's one question. Another question is if the Sean and Joan storyline applied to Yvonne and William. And if it applied to Darnell and Maya. Oh, and also Tony and Greg.
Across the board. Well, so I'm pretty comfortable with the second part of the question, where basically, how would all the other couples handle Joan and Sean's situation, right?
Yes.
Yes.
And then what was the first part again?
The first part is if I don't remember.
Okay. If it comes to you, let me know. So if Lim, for example, had a hysterectomy, is that it?
Yeah, that's it.
I'd be listening. And so I think that would be interesting. I think it would definitely call the conversation, just because I think Maya will probably be taken aback by it, since she has a very traditional view as far as what a woman brings to a relationship or what her highest purpose in life can be as a wife and mother. So for Lynn to make a decision to, in theory, reduce her ability to fulfill that capacity or serve in that role, I think that would definitely be something she would probably have deep concerns about. But I think ultimately it'd be a matter of the strength of their friendship would allow them to see the bigger picture of it being the best thing for Lynn from an overall health perspective and her quality of life, period. So I think it'd be just a matter of discussion and education on Maya's part, really learning what that impact would be, and then thinking outside of the box that, you know, there are alternative ways people can be a mother figure, whether it be through adoption or just simply being a mentor or a multitude of other ways people can fill that role in life without going through the traditional route if by virtue of a medical need they're unable to do so. So that'd be my expectation from a story progression standpoint. As far as how the other couples would handle Joan and Sean's situation, I think William and Yvonne would be very interesting because effectively it seems, particularly in the beginning of their relationship, they're effectively joined at the crotch. So they're very active in that regard. So I'd be pretty curious to see, first of all, who would be the person kind of establishing the cooling off period, as it were. So you would assume the woman would be the one kind of driving that. But given their relationship dynamic, it might be a better bet to assume William would be the one who would say, maybe we need to slow down that part of our relationship to allow more time for us to get to know each other and develop in that way. Which would be probably funny since Yvonne's a very strong personality. So she would probably only be down for that, but for so long. And, you know, the TV trope of the man in that situation is typically that the woman's typically much better at controlling that kind of flow, since basically all sex will occur in a TV relationship when the woman's up for it. So that'd be pretty funny to see how that would work. In Tony's case, I think it'd be funny since the dynamic they have financially kind of inverts the expected relationship roles, since she's the breadwinner, basically. And the fact that, not to discredit Greg's art, but it seems to be one of the things he does bring to the table is the physical aspect of a relationship. So if you remove that for a particular period of time, Tony may find she's not as enthralled with Greg if she just has to sit around and talk to him all day with his clothes on. So that'd be interesting to see if she really digs Greg outside of the physical passion they had previously. And let's see. And Maya and Darnell, I think that'd be interesting. You know, obviously them being a married couple and the fact that, you know, the trope is, you know, people like to think surface level with it. Like, oh, you know, once I get married, you know, it's got to be 3, 4, 5 times a week. Well, okay, first of all, anybody got all that time or energy over the course of life, but also life can happen. I mean, you know, if somebody has a sinus infection, they're probably not going to be in the mood. So, you know, what you going to do? You can be mad while they're taking the antibiotics, or if somebody, you know, sprains an ankle working out, you know, probably best if you know just because you stand off your feet don't mean you got to lay on your back, if you know what I mean. So. You know, these things that we don't think about usually, that are real life things that happen that can have significant periods of time where that's not on the table, at least in the sense you're typically thinking about. So you either got to get creative and have a vivid imagination, or, you know, just figure something out, because you know, life's not always built to follow the schedule you want. So you gotta make do with what you got.
That's true.
That's pretty interesting to see from a marriage standpoint. That's one thing I don't think we think of a lot of when they say, you know, for better or worse, sickness and health and so on, we think of the better or the health, you know, for richer. We don't necessarily factor in the, you know, it could, God forbid, it could be a, you know, significant injury or accident or illness. So what those things don't change the vows you took. They just change the life dynamic you have. So
I think about that.
I think about that.
Probably, probably more than a lot of people.
A lot of people.
Like, I look around.
I look around.
And I think about.
I think about.
Like, the people that we know that are married. They're in serious relationships. But sometimes I think. And I'm not wishing anything on anyone. But I feel like something always happens to someone you know. So it was like who later on might be widowed. Or who later on might have to deal with possibly their child dying. Or like cancer or divorce. I mean, I feel like These are all realistic things, like you said, no one thinks about the worst. But the worst will also happen. I don't mean to be kind of gory, but
I mean, it can be a sobering thought, but if anything, it teaches you to appreciate when things are, you know, going well. Like, if you have, you know, family to hang out around or loved ones to be with around the holidays and birthdays and things like that, to really appreciate them. In my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that covered all the couples. Did you have any additional insights or potential ways they may handle those situations?
No, I think you got it.
Cool.
All right, Liz. All right, Liz. Thanks again for tuning in.
Thoroughly appreciate it.
We couldn't do this without you.
Literally, it would just be us talking to each other. Which is cool, but, you know, it's nice to know people listen.
Yeah.
So.
Please remember to comment. Share. Like, rate.
5 stars.
And.
Email us.
Yeah.
At thick and thin pod.
Email. Tell us your thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah.
At thick and thin pod.
Instagram.
At thick and thin pod.
Period pod.
Snapchat.
Nope.
We ain't got a Snapchat. Nope. You do. Okay, cool. It's coming soon, Snapchat. Probably.
Nope.
All right.
I'm not updating that. Let's have Rodin do a Tony Rex tribute. That was my album, though, when I was a child. I didn't have it, but my mom did.
Of course.
Anyway, sorry. Thanks again for listening. I'm at Fork Seashoes. If y'all know how to spell it, look at the notes.
Yes, and of course, you can find me on Twitter at Ed B as in Burr. Shout out to Gucci Mane. Ed B Winning at the Twitter. And Ed Koff, I'm sorry, EDCOFF on Instagram.
Sure.
Adios.
All right, see you guys next time.
Or hear me, rather.
Okay, bye.
Either way.
Bye.